Good morning, everyone. I'm Nancy Dickinson. I'm going to be your moderator for Rev Up Your Product Design, the Concept Car Way. Welcome to everyone. I'm going to moderate the discussion and for about 30 minutes, and then we'll open up for lots of questions. So I want to make sure you're thinking about questions in advance. Just a little background on me. I've spent about 20 years focused on user experience and how we create great products that delight customers and create customer loyalty. Been able to work at a lot of interesting companies. And I'm going to focus on some key ideas and some questions of ours that I'll share with you in advance, because these are some of the things we'll be focused on. How do we, as an industry, start to adopt some best practices from other industries? And specifically, the one we're going to talk about today is how we can adopt from the auto industry concept cars. What do concept cars do? Not just for the product, but for the organizations and the people that create those products. And then, does your company currently have an effective way of envisioning the future in a way where teams work collaboratively with one another in defining that vision? Also in committing to that vision. And then how do you recognize some of the symptoms that start to let you know, I think we need to have this kind of collaborative exercise together. Those are just some questions to get you started in thinking of some of the questions that you might have as well. And we're going to focus on answering some of these. So what is vision typing? You're going to hear this word over and over. Vision typing is a process. It's a process by which a collaborative group of cross-functional people come together to think not just about how you can envision a new product, but also envision what that building of that product would mean for the company. For instance, this flying car that's in front of you is a vision type that was done by Audi in 2008. It's called the Calamari. So what would happen for an auto company if they were now building cars that had no wheels? What would it take in terms of the skills and the technologies? And what would it take in terms of the other partners that Audi works with? What would those partners and those other companies that manufacture parts of their car today, what would they have to be manufacturing in the future? So you see how a vision type, such as the one that you're looking at right now, could be such an important exercise, not only for the product group, but for the company themselves, to be thinking about what are the skills and technologies and who do we need to be in the future in order to deliver something like this. And often the process of vision typing, and vision typing is the process we're going to talk about today, is often a company-wide way of thinking about the future and preparing for the future. The output of the vision typing process is a vision type. And we're going to talk a lot about how that's different from a prototype today. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our first panelist, Jake Kressman. And each panelist is going to take about 5 minutes to give you the what, the how, the when, and the why of vision typing. And then we'll open up for your questions. Jake Kressman, please give him a hand.
Thanks. Morning, everybody. Kressman Design is basically a consultancy, a very small one, that is me. And here's some of the people that I've consulted with, and I increasingly find myself doing vision types for my clients. And it's been kind of a growing area. Other people who I know who are in the same area doing UX consulting are being asked to run more and more vision types for companies. So it's, I would expect to be here today, talking about vision types as a kind of rising up around the industry. Can I go that way? Okay, when to vision type. And when I heard the title of this presentation was concept car, it kind of brought back a lot of, made me think of a lot of vintage visions of the future. And so I've got a few of those for you in my presentation today. But wind to vision types, there's just a few of the symptoms. Okay, so you're at a critical decision point in the industry, and you need to see all alternative futures. And it's never something small, like maybe we should change our checkout flow this year, or maybe we should have a gallery view on the webpage. It's really big questions, like what if we decided to make the company an app and throw away the website? What if we decided to orient our product around people instead of a catalog of products? Really huge things that you're going to invest a lot of money in, and you want to see what they're going to look like first. It's also a great way to eliminate a lot of really bad ideas, like flying saucers for everybody. There's things you're immediately going to cut right out of the process and not even bother the regular design and development flow with. When your ideas are lacking focus, it's a way to make them more tangible. You know, thinking about how something makes its way through strategy and eventually to a development team, this whiteboard is about as clear and about as tangible as that idea has ever become. It's been a lot of spreadsheets, it's been PowerPoint presentations, it's been research documents, it's been a lot of discussions and whiteboards. And this spaghetti that you see, it's just about as clear as it ever became before you handed it off to a team to actually go build it. And the first thing they have to do is make sense out of it. So what if you had some sort of tool to clarify it before it goes into that process? When your thinking has become bogged down by legacy, this is something that I think we all deal with when you have architecture, you have design patterns, you have thinking, you have just general dogma in some cases that's holding you back from really grasping the full picture and really jumping forward. So it can be a great way to liberate your thinking. And this picture actually is a model made by Corbusier. He's one of the fathers of modern architecture. And at the time, they were criticized by being called the paper architects. Basically, they drew and modeled everything, and they hardly built any buildings at all. But through the power of those drawings and models, they were able to completely change the future of architecture. When you can't see the full picture of a concept, you know, often we are looking at a roadmap, we're looking at feature sets, and we're going down the path to build out specific feature sets, not really looking at the overall vision. Well, the vision type can give you that North Star, to give you that holistic look at what you're creating. This is actually the Monsanto house that was built at Disneyland in the 1950s. And they created this as a vision of the house of the future. And it's everything from the landscaping in the front yard to the can opener in the kitchen. It's a fully complete vision of what this house would be like. And 60 years later, houses obviously don't look like this. But I'll bet if you were able to go back in time and look through, you would see different threads towards the homes of today. The concept needs to be shared. You know, a lot of times this strategic thinking happens between a very small group of people. And if you want to share that across everybody, from engineering to marketing to maybe even user research, creating a concept, creating a vision type, and making an event out of it is a great way to communicate those ideas. And lastly, when your thinking has become confined by the development cycle, it's a way to think bigger, faster. And this is something I'm dealing with, even in clients I'm working with today, is that we have a very narrow sprint cycle where we produce pixels on a weekly basis that go into engineering the following week. And if it wasn't for a vision type, I don't think we would have been able to think about those really big questions. I think everyone who's in here who has an agile development team, you know, when do you are you going to give yourself the space to answer those really big questions and to, you know, give yourself that North Star of where you're headed? So the last thing on when to put vision type in your flow. You know, strategy is this huge spaghetti of different ideas, and usually that gets handed off to a design and development cycle. Well, wouldn't it be cool if you could hand that off to a vision typing phase to actually make sense out of all that before it goes into your dev cycle? So I've done it that way. I think what's even better than that is why not make vision typing part of your strategy process. You know, strategy doesn't really have a process. It's this big mess of conversations. If you applied some sort of method like vision typing, you could structure that a little better. You could also be moving towards an outcome, like a vision type deliverable. And the best thing that you could possibly do is move from vision typing to a high fidelity prototype, if you have the time. So you've taken the time to clarify all of your strategy, then you've actually built it and interacted with it. By the time you get to a development cycle, you're working with really clear ideas that have been reached a high degree of refinement, and that's really my favorite, when allowed. So that's the win, and I look forward to answering some questions later in the presentation.
Hello. Very good morning, early morning. I'm Roseanne Stempinski. I'm a brand and experience design consultant with STEM Design. Can you hear me now? Good. So my name is Roseanne Stempinski. I'm a brand and experience design consultant with STEM Design. And my background is pretty varied. I've worn a lot of hats in the design industry and worked and consulted with many different brands. My approach, because of my background, I've been able to work in strategic roles as well as design tactical roles. And this has given me the opportunity to understand the why we're solving the problems that we're solving at 10,000 feet, as well as the how to actually execute at 10 feet. So it's this ability to go back and forth between these two vantage points that I think is really critical, especially for when we're vision typing. So, vision typing sessions. My most recent experience was with eBay, and I was able to create, produce, and participate in a broad range of vision typing sessions. And some of them were able to last a whole week, and some only lasted 2 hours. And so, you're probably more familiar with the ones that last a couple of hours because we're all really pressed for time. But the ones that lasted a week were a gift, and they were really rare. And so I'm going to talk a bit about those. So what the purpose of the ones that lasted for about a week, these vision typing sessions, were enabled teams to solve problems that are often too big or complex to do so in a normal working fashion. We're all really busy, and to get all the key stakeholders working together really collaboratively in a short period of time is really, really doesn't always happen like it should. So so to get everyone in the same room for about 5 days is really important to be efficient. So who did we have in these week-long sessions? We had the key stakeholders that you'd want to have to get your product produced. And so we had designers, engineers, user researchers, product managers, project sponsors, each of these people that are critical. The project sponsor is especially critical because they actually can make the project real, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. So a bit about the process. How do you put something like this on? How do you put on a five-day session? So number one, the first thing you need to do is really be very clear on your problem. Clearly identify this. If you can't articulate what the problem is, you're going to spin out. Number two, plan. The most important thing to do, especially with a session like this, is to give yourself adequate time for planning. We spent weeks planning these sessions prior to, and then there's the actual participating in these sessions, as well as the post work, which is also highly critical. So don't underestimate the power of planning. Provide the right environment. This includes a venue far away from everyone's normal work routine. So what we did is we just chose another campus or another venue. It was very important. This also prevents people from sneaking away to other meetings and getting distracted. And then also another thing in terms of providing is allow people opportunities for really fun breaks. When you have something like that's lasting this long, it's really great. We had improv artists come, we had massages, Also have lots of food. That's really important as well. And set brainstorming rules. So there are no bad ideas. Think big. So that's all part of what I would call provide. The next is pre-think. You always want to give your community, your attendees, the opportunity to do some homework. Give them some homework, and so that they can meet beforehand. This sets them up for success, and it improves the efficiency. So they're not walking into the session with a cold start. So it gets the juices flowing. And people, of course, we need to really understand who are we designing for, and so that's also why research is involved very early on. But also, what we did midweek was actually test a lot of our concepts with users, so we could adjust and course correct if necessary. So it was really important, and it provided us really, really critical information. And then produce. It's important to just generate a lot of ideas. And create low and high fidelity prototypes. So the more you produce, the more you have to react to. And it also creates a common language. So as Jake showed, that whiteboard that's really messy, you know, if the more you produce and create something that's tangible, people have a better understanding of what they're actually creating. And lastly, this is really, really important. I can't emphasize how important this is to promote. So once you've gone ahead and you've created your vision type, create a buzz with it. We created a book that we could distribute. We also had an internal website that we created, as well as videos that we showed throughout campus. And this created a really wonderful buzz. So this is just an example of one of the vision types that resulted from one of these week-long sessions. It is now a real concept, and this lives at garden.ebay.com, and it's an experience that integrates search and view item. And so one of the ways that we knew we were onto something big is when we received this this email from someone outside of our organization that said, "Hey, you know, I've heard about these vision typing sessions that you're having. How can I have one for my team, and how much do they cost?" And we thought, oh, hey, I think we're onto something here. So that's what the buzz, when you promote, that's what the buzz can really generate for you. So I'll hand it over to Armando.
Great, thank you. Armando?
Hello, everyone. My name is Armando, and I help companies create better products by thinking about innovation and creativity, adding those thinking processes into their product life cycles. Right now, I'm heading the user experience team at Miwo. The essence of the part of the talk that I'm going to be talking about deals with why do you need to create a vision type. The first thing that comes to mind is how the automobile industry is using creativity and innovation to get ahead of the competition. They create these great concept cars that sometimes take about years to produce. They spend millions of dollars. And when you think about what comes out in the market, some of these concept cars are not exactly what they're being shown in the showroom. There's something similar to it. This is an example of the Chevy Volt. As you can see, the actual prototype looks much better than the end result. That's okay, you can do that. In other cases, like in the Mazda Cosmo, there was a prototype or a concept car created in the 1960s that enabled Mazda to come up with the new generation of engines that we're gonna build. It was called the Wankel engine or the rotary engine, and since then they've actually been producing engines based on that technology. So some of these prototypes or concept cars do not end up being on the market, but what they do is that they're being used as catalysts to new ideas and the innovation for the company. So going back to the idea of vision typing, vision types are really visualizations of the future. And I believe that the consumer software industry needs or could learn a lot from the car industry in the, in this aspect. Our industry is full of examples of products that may or may not be solving a real problem for people out there in the world, and products that are being released very quickly that may not have hit the mark in terms of the quality that they need to hit. A lot of it is because of the focus on documentation a lot of companies have. You know, when you think about how projects are being produced in companies, there's lots of documents that drive the product lifecycle, PRDs, BRDs, ERDs, whatever document you may think about, PowerPoints, Excel sheets, emails. That is like what Jake was talking about. It's a big mess. So how do you make sense out of all that? Vision Type can actually get you out of that situation rather successfully. The other thought or idea here is the difference between a vision type and a prototype. As we said, a vision type allows you to take a glimpse into the future by visualizing what that could be. A prototype is actually taking that vision and testing it, adding you know, what the experience could actually behave like and what are the feasibilities for that experience. One of the things that we want to promote here today is that both of them are really needed, and they're a really good idea to use. In terms of the whys, why would you want to do this? Well, the vision types unleash creativity and eventually create differentiation for your company. By creating a visualization of what the product should be like, you may be able to come up with ideas that are ahead of the competition. So you might be able to help your company become differentiated much more quickly. As we said, they're catalysts for new ideas, and not only for the product, but even for the organization. When you think about what Mazda did with the rotary engine, they actually had to retrofit or change the way they were going to produce cars going forward. So they had to change their machinery, they had to change the skill set that their employees were actually having to use. So there's a lot of thinking and a lot of influence that these vision types can actually create. They also provide a foundational direction. Like Jake was saying earlier, once you are, for example, in the Agile Scrum process, there's a lot of Agile Scrum is really based on production of ideas, and there's a lot of section of projects, and there's a lot of things going on. If you don't have a very clear vision of what you're building and that process, it might be really hard to come up with a really good product. And finally, as you know, we know, it might influence you to understand what you shouldn't build. Out of a prototype, you might be able to understand not only what you build, but what you shouldn't be doing in the future. So I want to talk about a use case here, the Mevo Vision Types. Mevo is the company that I work for, and Mevo is a consumer product company online, and we have been in business since 2005. Mevo was originally created as an integrated platform for instant messaging. In 2007, we came out with a new product, which was the Mevo Bar. It's a social bar for publishers to enable them with social features and also enable their users to communicate through chat. And finally, in 2011, we came up with a new product concept, which was trying to come up with solutions for finding great content online. And what we did is we came up with this feature, this product that was enabling people to actually check into websites as they were browsing the web, something like Foursquare is doing in the physical space, but for online presence. After a while, we were trying to do some research about it, and we figured out that the actual problem that we were trying to solve wasn't really finding websites. It was really trying to figure out how to enable people to find content that they were really interested in and still earn a reputation by doing that online. So what we did is we created this vision type internally in the company. We wanted to know how do we take check-ins to the next level to orient it more towards the creation of topics and interests online. And what we did is we created this internal vision type in the company. And what we did, we gave the we created a competition across five different teams. Three of them were external teams. They were actual agencies that we hired, and two internal teams in the company. And we basically gave them the grand vision that we had about making Mevo the best place to find content related to your topics and while you earn influence. And we basically gave them a whole month to think about, you know, how can we actually do that? How do we take the web check-ins to the next level? What I'm about to show you are a few ideas. Without going too deep into it, this is one that was produced that was really thinking about content more in a visual way, displaying information other than URLs, making them feel more as images or collections of things that you were amassing. The next concept was about letting people express how they felt about the news and the websites that they were actually finding online. And finally, this concept was really fun. It was actually about creating collections of content online without using even one word. So we were basically relying on images and icons and numbers. So it was a really fun exploration. And finally, the other vision type team was actually trying to figure out what would that experience be in the use of smartphones. So that's just a little showcase of what we did. And one of the things that I wanted to highlight is what came out of this vision type exercise that we were doing wasn't only the mock-ups or the visuals that we were coming out with, but one of the most important things that came out of it is we actually came out understanding what was the model of the product that we needed to put together going forward. And it was the understanding that to create a content curation destination site and widgets to get you to that product, you actually had to think about two different kinds of audiences, the content curators and the content consumers. So that was something that came very quickly through the vision types. And finally, what I wanted to do here is kind of depict a diagram of how the vision types influence a living prototype we actually created out of those ideas that came out of the vision type and how they're actually influencing the roadmap for Mevo going forward.
Great, thank you. And thank you, panel. That was to set some context on what is a vision type, what are some of the outputs, how is it different from a prototype. That was the when, the why, the what, and the how of vision typing. I'm going to ask them a few questions, and while I do that, please get ready to ask your own. We have a microphone set up over there, and there will be grand prizes. The first 20 people to ask a question will get a new car. Of course, it's this car. They're very cute. They're little concept, matchbook concept cars. So.
Actually, that one's mine.
No, he claimed this one. Sorry. That one's not available. So, be thinking of those questions. So, panel, we now understand a little bit about what vision typing is. I think probably it's still a little bit cloudy in folks' minds. But how do you get executive support for doing vision types, especially when we know that everybody is so busy and so focused on tactical deliverables? How do you sell a vision type internally?
So from my standpoint, I think as a product leader in your company, you need to figure out what are the problems that the company is trying to solve and find the instances or the opportunities for you to come in with the possible solution for it by suggesting this new methodology. It's really about looking for the opportunity internally. There might be times in which it's not the right time because the company is really pressed for time, trying to release lots of features and functionalities. I think that the opportunity is when the problem is brewing, right? And at the onset of a larger problem, and then that's where you need to come in and, you know, kind of think about, hey, you know, we've been trying to solve this problem for a while. I think I have a methodology can actually help us visualize the solutions for it, and then kind of take it from there. It's a lot about promotion, as Roseanne was saying.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to add on that?
I would also say that the promotion, you know, when you have something that's successful, the promotion creates that buzz, and it gives you that permission, like I had underscored. So being able to just demonstrate the value is really, really important, and making kind of creating a buzz where the executive or the decision makers are hearing about it, not only from you, but from other people in the company, I think is critical. And if you somehow get your vision type out there in the public domain and create a public buzz, that can also be very influential.
Great. So, thank you. Yes, Rob.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think you know, the Vault's a great example of bold vision type and initial generation, and then it, for various reasons, which would include manufacturing cost, time to market and all that stuff, it gets a bit dumbed down to the point where potentially it's uninspiring. And I would make the argument that the Vault is a great example. Had it been closer to the vision type, it probably would have performed better in the market so far. So my question to you, are you aware of any companies that make its own mission to actually commercialize the vision type and do that regularly? Because you know, at the end of the day, I think the source of inspiration that comes through in vision typing sometimes could demand a premium in a marketplace, as long as it could be realized in a commercial sense. So any companies that you know of that say, you know what, we're just going to make a habit of it, not to dumb down during prototyping?
Okay, great question. So are there companies out there that the panel knows of that really make it their mission that they're going to actually produce their vision types as closely as possible to the design and experience, correct?
Yeah.
So also products, you know, a lot of people are not only vision typing products. Really want to underscore that in the end-to-end ecosystem, and especially with context-aware computing, a lot of companies are concepting an entire experience across multi-platforms. So that is also something that can be vision typed, is not just the product, but a connected service, something like that. Does anything come to mind for any of you about a company that you think exemplifies getting their products and services close to vision types?
Apple's kind of a no-brainer.
I think IDEO is one of the companies that comes to the forefront for me. Frog Design, they've been involved in a lot of really nice vision types. Any other ones?
I think in the car industry, in that respect, it's a lot different, because the difference between the prototype and the actual one is all the compromises made along the way. When working at Electronic Arts, you're able to hit your vision type pretty close because you have a lot more flexibility, and you know it's all there on the screen. It's a little less of a challenge.
I would also say that the example that I showed too, that from the vision typing from the week-long session that exists in on eBay in the garden, they call it garden.ebay.com. It's this, you know, this place where you can go and check out some interesting ideas that are percolating that could very well go live to the site. So I think companies that have a little sandbox that's public that people can dip into, that's one company that I'm aware of.
Great. Good. Our next question. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. It's a great panel. That's actually a very good slide, and hopefully I'll get a good picture of that. Just a little bit of background. I work for a large corporation, and our processes are kind of hybrid. We do a lot of the visioning requirements gathering up front in more traditional waterfall, and then once we get sign-off from our business partners, we take that. We break it down into sizable chunks of work for our development teams to work on. And so there's a blend of going from waterfall to agile. Have you guys worked with companies that are in that type of situation where you've got multiple methodologies? how does vision typing fit into that? And could you speak to some real examples of how do you get those? Looks like you've got a collection of vision types that ultimately feed into creating a single prototype, which then can become part of that overall roadmap.
I'd like to answer that one.
Great.
I've worked in really some very rigid waterfall structures before, so I definitely know what you're talking about. And in my experience, you want to get as far upstream from the waterfall as you possibly can. And so the vision type tends to be something that's completely unrelated to your regular development cycle. As this one company, they just sort of locked us away for a whole month, removed us from our desk into a different area of the company. They kind of cleared out a floor to produce a vision type. And it included a lot of cross-functional people. That can be great, too, because a lot of the strategy in a waterfall environment happens with strategy-type people and doesn't get to the development leads who will actually be putting this together. So getting a cross-functional team, putting it way outside the stream of the regular cycle, and cool third thing, which I just forgot. Oh, I know. At the end of it, they made a really big production out of unveiling the vision type. And I think the purpose of that was to really give it a huge push, momentum, to drive it towards the strategy people, to influence their thinking, to then get it to trickle down that waterfall.
Did that answer your question?
Kind of. So with e-commerce platforms, you can certainly have your creative designers generate comps and wireframes sort of as an initial prototype. What is the equivalent of a vision type when you're talking about putting those visions into concepts to feed into that product? I mean, where's that? I think where I'm confused still is I've got a vision document. I've got my creative designers. They usually produce what we call advanced prototypes, which are our comps, right, layouts and stuff. What's an example of a vision type in that situation?
Can you repeat the last part?
So
can you speak a little bit more loudly?
Sorry. When we get our vision, we have our creative designers produce, some mock-ups and some comps, early comps that are in the form of layouts and what they see the flow to look like. We get our usability team as well. We call those prototypes. And we then take that and further refine it, go through iterative process to refine that. Do you see vision types as somewhere in between that, or are we talking the same thing?
I think they come before the actual prototype that you're talking about. If you're building a prototype that's not very clearly well-defined, I think that's kind of a troublesome spot. You gotta know what you're building before you build it, and then figure out if the prototype allows you to understand, is this a good idea? Is it sticking? Are people happy with that, product? And if it doesn't, then throw it away. Go to the next idea. I mean, I think that's what the vision, the mix between a vision type and a prototype do. The prototype is going to allow you to know whether or not your idea is good. So
yeah, the difference from there's all kinds of differences for me between a prototype and a vision type. A prototype is something that you're building to help inform how you are going to build it. A vision type is something that you're building so that you can learn by making, so that you can strategize by manufacturing something, and then actually being able to show that around all levels of the company, across every different kind of discipline in the company, so that instead of talking about the strategy, you are figuring it out by seeing it. Mm-hmm. And so a vision type often, I would consider many vision types a failure if they're built, because that is not their purpose. Their purpose is to start discourse, is to inspire all sorts of other parts of the company to engage in a strategic discussion about what might then be prototyped and put into the regular development process. So does that help?
That helps. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, is everybody getting their cars?
Two questions. One is, you guys talked about examples where at eBay the process was 1 week long, and I think in the automobile industry you guys talked about how it could be even a year to come up with this vision type. So in the tech industry, and you guys talked about issues, not issues, but the process of agile development and putting something out there in a matter of weeks, what do you think is like an ideal time frame for this vision type process, specifically in the tech world? And then my other question is, what is a good metric of success? I mean, how do I know at the end of this process that what is a metric of success for this vision type?
Great. So what's the time frame, and what, and how do you measure success? Yeah. Great.
I can take that. So one of the things in regards to timing, I think it really depends on how much time you have and what is the tolerance for, you know, the type of session you can put on. With a week-long session, you can produce a lot, and you get a lot of stakeholders involved, and everyone's just marinating together like they wouldn't be able to in a normal work situation. Sometimes you're really pinched for time, and you're going to have to make the most out of like a two-hour lunch session. And in terms of how do you measure it, I think you need to figure out, you need to define your measures of success. Because very often, the business measures of success, the business ROI, doesn't work with design. Designers are always struggling with that. So you have to define, okay, once we identify what our strategy is, let's see what barometers of success, you know, how let's develop our own barometers of success based on that strategy so that's more custom. Does that help?
Yeah, could you give an example, maybe in the eBay vision type that you guys worked on, what was a metric of success? Because the vision type doesn't go all the way to the user, right? There's no user testing.
Although a lot of vision, because of usertesting.com, concepttesting.com, as you are working on a vision type, it's really easy to just get immediate feedback, scan in ideas, get immediate feedback from a user base that is sort of informing the vision type. But it is not, it is generative research. It's actually trying to help you generate more ideas rather than being a validative research. So the whole vision typing process, how many of you have heard of like diverge, go big, go broad, to go narrow? The vision typing process is for the entire company, for the entire product, or for a feature in that product, to help guide that whole diverge process. But not doing it by talking, doing it by making, and doing it, making it cross-functional. And to Roseanne's point, sitting down at the beginning and deciding, getting really clear, not just on what is the problem that is being focused on, but what are the measures? What is the purpose of the vision type? Is it to get the company discussing things at a more strategic level? Is it to get a big group of ideas out so that you make all the mistakes and have all the bad ideas way up front where it's cheap rather than taking it all the way through the waterfall process and costing hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars just to find out this wasn't a good idea to begin with? So a lot of that, setting those measures up front, are very much a part of putting together the vision type plan and making it successful.
And just to underscore, sometimes the measures of success are internal, you know, just a common understanding, just getting everyone on the same page and that they're all speaking the same language. And sometimes it's external. So measuring, you know, based on, you may have generated several prototypes and you're testing those. And so some of your ROI for that could be, you know, is, you know, does someone understand how, you know, how to complete this particular flow? You know, so it's really up to you to define them.
So we have, before I take your question, we have one question off the Twitter feed that I'd like to, which is that someone's wondering if there's anyone out there or if any of you here have experience incorporating vision typing into the Agile process specifically.
Pretty much everyone I work with has now adopted the Agile process. And if you look at the typical process, it has about 2 to 3 days for, you know, discovery and creative thinking about the problem, which is ridiculous. So, you know, you just have to. That's what I've found.
Yeah, what we're doing at Meebo is think about an additional step before Agile starts, any kind of scrumming happens, which we call Scrum Zero, which is, you know, the ideation part, right? And these events are happening right before the actual project. So a lot of the vision typing, a lot of the creative workshops that we do are actually informing what needs to be done on the roadmap. So it's before the actual scrum.
Great. Thank you. Yes.
Hi. First, I want to commend all of you guys there because I think it's an important message, and the work that you guys are doing is helping the industry. So I don't mean my challenge in any disrespect. I think, though, it's kind of a Band-Aid on what's going on right now, because really what we're talking about here, the elephant in the room, is the lack of an architect in a technology agency. We kind of, in the technology sphere where we work, I mean, we allowed the title architect to be misappropriated kind of by like the biggest nerd in the room, and it's like the software architect. And actually the argument is that they're actually structural engineers, and they think of little d designers as interior decorators, right? So the difference between what you guys are talking about and having an industry where we have an experienced architect as the alpha is that it allows for follow-through, right? Because as soon as you go to vision and you hand it off and engineers take it, right, we do not have architects in our industry. We have structural engineers working with interior decorators, and there isn't anybody who starts from concept to design to development. So how do you guys address that issue of follow-through? Or is it kind of like we're starting it off and we're giving it back and we're going to kind of just, again, you get mediocrity at the end. So is follow-through part of the strategy at this point for any of you guys?
So I think one of the points I'd like to make, and if we didn't make this clear, I would like to make it now, is that these vision types are not done by designers only. Yeah. We're actually including engineering and executives, people from marketing, whoever, right? These are not things just done by designers.
I'm sorry, not to cut you off. So it's the definition of designers, though, I think, that we're talking about, right? Because if you're talking designers as aesthetics, still the designer and an architect are very, very different. You're not going to have a group of people get together and get the Bilbao Museum out of it, right? I mean, not all architecture is great. If you want a great premium, you're going to need to get a great architect. If you're building a strip mall, you don't need it, right? It's just cookie-cutter templates, same in our industry. So designers and engineers, you guys are kind of arguing getting everybody together in a room, but there isn't anybody who's the architect that has ownership from concept and guaranteeing that what the engineers build is actually to vision, then at a certain point, it's just propagating a lot of the same innate symptoms, right?
Are you asking about process then? Like if this is this happening early on, then how do you carry it through so that it's actually communicated, like what you've come together to create will actually manifest
yeah.
in that same, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, I think like what I've illustrated, I think that's what's really important is getting all the, you know, a multidisciplinary team, the key stakeholders that are going to actually produce whatever this is and play a significant role. And just because, I mean, there are different ways you can do this. You can have an initial session like this and then have sessions throughout. You can have mini vision typing sessions to go back and remind yourself because likely things are going to evolve and change. But you want to keep what is that germ of that idea or what you're trying to, you know, what were you trying to solve to begin with? And keeping that through. So I think it's, you know, we may be highlighting some things that you can do, you know, once or that may have been really spectacular because they're a week. But there are certainly, like I said, there's a range and it's up to you to keep that going. And so I think, and that's why the people who are actually involved in the process at the end are involved in the process at the beginning too. So does that help?
Yep. Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the things that I've experienced and I've also heard as teams get more proficient at Agile is that some of them are adding Scrum Zero at the beginning of every Agile Scrum phase. But also others are saying, you know, what we're really missing with Agile development is that North Star. The North Star that is a big vision, a big open vision of the direction that we're going, often with many products, many features and products all kind of feeding into the same big vision. North Star does two things. It actually shows you the direction and it lights your way. And it's more of a broad light that allows you, and excuse the mixed metaphor, but sort of like a boat tacking its way towards it. It doesn't mean you're going in a straight line. It means you're trying some things, you're failing fast, and then you're tacking this way. You're learning as you're doing. And so by setting a big vision type that cross-functional teams work on together that allows everybody to, not with words, but with actually having a vision that they've built together, act as a North Star for a very, very large multi-year a group of products or company direction can really help all the Agile scrums to be having that bigger picture while doing the agile execution work. So that you see how it works really well together to have the vision type that you use longer term.
I'd like to add one more thing. I'd say also the documentation, you know, so that if you capture it the right way, then that'll also help with the communication along the way as you progress the journey. So
I think that Chevy Volt was a great example of there's the Volt as the concept car, the vision type. It wasn't exactly what they built, but it acted as that vision and that North Star for a very, very long-term, very complex project. So all the teams kind of had a vision for what they were going for. Yeah, next question.
So Roseanne mentioned a bunch of work that went into the eBay engagement, several weeks of preparation and homework and things like that. I'm hoping you guys can talk a little bit about some of the specifics of that, especially around the homework, like how you prepared people to come to the vision typing and be productive.
I'm sorry, it's hard to hear you. So did...
So I think you asked, how do you prepare people with homework?
Yep, so general preparations and specifically right. What kind of homework you're giving folks to get them ready to be really productive in a vision typing session.
Sure, yeah.
Thank you.
So the sessions, like I said, I mean, they can range from 2 hours to a week, and that homework is going to differ depending on whatever the problem is that you're trying to solve and how you want to set teams up for success. So as an example, the week-long sessions, because they were really rich in being multidisciplinary, one of the things that was critical is getting those multidisciplinary teams together in a room and giving them, you know, having them identify, you know, whatever, either you're giving them the problem or they have identified their own problem, and getting them talking about it so that they understand and maybe just posing some key questions to them. I've also participated in sessions that are, like I said, as short as 2 hours. And for something like that, you can set people up for so that they're coming in fresh in a way where you're having them answer a question ahead of time or bring in maybe some artifacts that have to do with whatever you're going to be discussing. One thing I had people do for one session was we were going to try to break open some words and what certain words meant to us. And so I asked them to bring in examples of homework of things that represented those words. That could be anything from a product to a website to an experience. And they were to illustrate that particular word, and they were going to come into the session prepared to present that in their point of view. And so that gets people, you know, really in that headspace. So it really depends on whatever it is, but I would say having them have to answer a question or doing something is really important. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think the other part to answer this question is, like, you need to understand if you're gathering, you know, like people from multiple disciplines together for a whole week, you know, like that's like 5 days, okay? How are you going to structure the actual work so that it's fun, right? Because if it becomes just work, then you might not hit the mark. So think about activities that you need to interlace in the process. You know, I remember at some events that I led in the past, we brought in you know, some kind of drumming exercise that would create you know, synergy across the different disciplines that were participating in the event. You might want to go out and do something else. So break it apart so that it doesn't feel monotonous and it feels fun at the end.
Next question.
This is actually nicer than my real car, so thank you. This is actually sort of a follow-on to that topic, more about the logistics. Is you show the page full of messy documentation, you know, those things don't get done because they're fun. They get done because you want to try and get people on the same page and have some output at the end of the day. So what are you doing? What are you producing in between the starting point and when you come up with the nice pictures at the end?
Great.
Yeah, for me, the vision typing process is kind of a series of methodologies. Like, I usually start with sort of an interview phase, and then from that I produce a presentation that's usually like a 1 hour long summary of everything that I heard. I also produce a competitive analysis where I go out and it's kind of just like a deck of different examples from all over. Also a lot of drawings and sketches. I draw a lot, especially to explain ideas, not really storyboards, but just sort of telling stories with drawings. And in certain projects, we've
you know, filled entire rooms full of drawings that sort of just describe what we're talking about. And that room itself kind of serves as a gallery of your ideas so that when other people from the organization come around, you can walk them through the room to talk about all these ideas as they're developing. That's kind of a cool one. Then there are things like storyboards, anything that helps you tell stories. I see a lot of people do cartoons. Some people have done videos. I did, you know, where they sort of do a day in the life of with this product, actually produce something that's watchable and entertaining a lot of the times. And someone did, it's really cool, they just sort of did a bunch of photographs and then put captions in the photographs like it was sort of a comic book, and basically create a comic book to describe their vision type. So they really didn't do like screen pixels. They just were doing all these different storytelling methods. I think it's, and in the end, when you finally do this presentation, you combine all these things together for impact.
Yeah, the first vision type that I worked on was for the board of eBay. And the board of eBay had been working with Bain for about 3 years to really look at what is the future direction of the company. And because there was a lot of fantastic work that had been done by Bain to help the board to decide these, you know, basically down to two major directions that the company could go. But the board really couldn't visualize what the product would look like if they made a decision to really double down on auctions and to stay in more of the tails of new and in season, you know, as products come into the market and as they go out of the market, that's really what eBay owns. So should we double down on that, or should we really compete with Amazon that's straight in the middle of new and season? So the vision type was never meant to be an actual built product. The vision types that we created, it took one idea and just blew it out super bright of what the company's product and services would look like if eBay doubled down on one business direction versus if eBay went in the other direction. And I have to be a little oblique here because there's confidential information in that. But so we really just, for the board, build out these two, what would be the result of what eBay would look like as a product and a service if you made this decision or you made that decision. And they were purposefully designed to look extremely different experiences and features. And it was used at that level to make that kind of strategic decision for the company.
Hello. I actually work at the team that does this kind of work for PayPal. And to avoid the confusion between this and prototyping, we call this visioneering. But anyway, you mentioned confidentiality. So my question is, when you do this outside, you know, for an outside, as a consultancy, how do you deal with intellectual property and confidentiality when you're working on similar problems for competing companies?
Mm-hmm. Great question. One of you want to take that?
Take that. As a consultant?
Yeah, sure. Well, for me, it's just I have to sign an NDA. That's all. Yeah, yes. It's not too much of a problem.
The question was, how do you handle intellectual property when you're creating one of these vision typing sessions? Yeah, I mean, it's whatever the parameters are for that company, you know, and understanding what, you know, whatever is created, how much of it, what can be shared and what can't be shared. So
yeah.
Using your best judgment.
I think usually it's you know, the vision types that I've done have been when I was internal to the company. But regardless, if we brought in outside agencies, it would just be under the same parameters as any other project they would work on that was under the non-disclosure and confidentiality. So as long as there's an NDA in place.
I will say, though, as a consultant doing vision types a lot, it gives you very little to put in your portfolio.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Yes.
Great talk, by the way. So thank you very much. And I think we touched on this just two questions ago, so I apologize for the redundancy, but I think it's slightly different. Can you guys talk a little bit about the role of fidelity in the visioneering work, or the vision typing work, sorry? You know, obviously, there's a need to be really, really, really high-fi, and there's a need sometimes to be low-fi, and I think it kind of matches with the goals of the vision type. So if you could talk really quickly about that, that'd be really good.
Sure.
The vision types that I was sharing with you from Meebo, one of the goals was to make them as shiny as possible so we could get a lot of people excited internally in the company and, you know, get them to talk about the things we were actually coming up with. I feel like it depends on the actual project you're dealing with or the problem you're dealing with. You know, it could be as low fidelity as a bunch of drawings. You know, it really, I don't think there's any standard around this thing. You need to figure out, you know, what fits the need that you have.
And knowing the audience. So understanding how that's going to be received with your audience. If high fidelity is going to make them think, wow, you've spent way too much time on this, then maybe you want to do something that's a little lower fidelity, but it's rich with ideas. So.
Great. Well, I think we are out of time. So I really thank you for attending, and we will be around. If you have any other questions, come on up. We'd love to talk to you, and thank you for attending.
Thanks, everybody.